Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League! Oh, what a goal! It's Danny Rose on his Premier League debut!
Sheringham Fleck and Klinsmann is in!
He's got it lost under his feet and it's come from the middle!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's most dangerous Tottenham Hotspur podcast. It's Wheeler Dealer Radio, and welcome to the first ever all nice mic edition of Wheeler Dealer Radio. I am joined by my co-host and partner in crime, Ben Daniels. He is here with me today, and he has finally installed his nice mic that he was given by his brother as a subtweet during the holidays. Ben, why don't you regale our listeners with your dulcet tones?
So I see when nobody else is on the podcast, I get promoted from sidekick to co-host.
You know, I give you gifts and you just throw them back in my face like this. Like, this is why I'm not nice to you on the podcast.
You know, it's the kind of gift that, like, you give me in secret that you're ashamed to let anybody else know. But when anybody else comes around, suddenly you're dogging me in front of your friends.
There are dozens of listeners to this podcast, Ben. Dozens.
No, as far as I'm concerned, the only people listening to this are you and me, and we're recording it for our own benefit.
Well, certainly Spurs are doing their level best to chip away at our audience, because, boy, they're not making it easy this year to talk about them every week.
But hey, at least we got a win. So,
hey, yeah, we got four whole points to talk about today. Today we are here. We are recording this the night of our victory against Norwich, 2-1 at home. And this past weekend, we had a 0-0 draw to Watford, so that's pretty fun to chew on. These were not super enjoyable games, but I feel like they were both sort of a piece. Would you agree, Ben?
Yeah, I would say they were both pretty lackluster affairs with some bright spots, which I guess is kind of the operative descriptor for our entire season post-Pochettino.
Just post Pochettino.
Yeah, I mean, before Mourinho came in, I don't think there were any bright spots. Fair enough. All tragic misery. Now we're in this bright new future of miserable, but we can point to a few things and be like, hey, maybe it's going to get better.
So what you're saying is, it's miserable, but now Lo Celso's starting.
That's right. Right, that's the really one key thing in common that these two games have is Giovanni Lo Celso started, and didn't just start, but started as a central midfielder, which, for friends of the pod, would know we have been banging on about for a really long time.
So I have said on this podcast, I think his future is in the attacking band, and I still think that's true. But in the short term, it's certainly having dividends.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reality is just our central midfield is such an obvious weakness in our team, and we have this guy who's capable of doing it. Why not let him play there? You know, in an imaginary, hypothetical best 11 Spurs post-transfer window, you know, we have this shiny new defensive midfielder who comes in and plays alongside Tanguy and Ndombele, and Lo Celso is free to be the Eriksen replacement we signed him to be. But failing that, you know, it's nice to see that Jose has finally realized that Lo Celso has this obvious skill set and is finally putting it to use. And, boy, does he just look good or what?
He looks, I mean, it's the incisive passes. He's actually, which is not something I would have expected given some of the games I've watched in Spain and France, like, he presses a lot better than I would have expected. I mean, he seems to be, he's so good, and he creates chances, he shuts down attacks occasionally. I mean, he just cuts other teams open. You think if we had anything resembling a forward line right now beyond Eric Lamella and the shambling corpse of Hunming Sun, you know, we'd be really creating a lot of chances. I mean, he looks really good. And do you think there was a quote Mourinho had this week where he sort of talked about how quiet he is? Do you think one of the reasons he didn't get more starts more immediately under Mourinho is because he was just sort of sitting in the back of class, not raising his hand, and Mourinho thought he was a pussy?
I mean, I think that's a pretty generous interpretation of events. It's possible that he just wasn't a very assertive presence on the training pitch, but, like, surely his game spoke for itself. It's not like he was, you know, quiet on the pitch because he's a quiet person. Presumably he was out there doing all the things we, you know and love that he can do. But yeah, it's possible that, I mean, Jose's the kind of guy who, he's a big character, you know, maybe he just likes big characters in the dressing room, and Lo Celso's lack of assertiveness, you know, maybe signaled to him that he wasn't quite ready for prime time, rather than he was just daydreaming about his sister. You know, you don't know.
Hey, he's not a Brazilian, so let's not get carried away. He just looks freakishly like her, and takes really uncomfortable pictures next to her in bikinis.
We've all seen Instagram photo, yeah, of her in the bikini while pregnant with his hand on her stomach in just the creepiest way possible. he's got a little bit of Neymar in him.
Let's hope not too much. Yeah, he's been phenomenal, and I mean, I don't know about you, I just had this dark thought today. I was like, oh, I really thought Lo Celso was going to help this team by taking us to the next level, and now he's just going to help this team by getting sold for a ton of money in a few years so we can buy someone when we're ready to get better again. It's just, I hope that it, I mean, look, Tottenham obviously have a lot of work. Tottenham have a lot of work to do in the summer. We could do a lot worse than having a base of, you know, Tanguy and Ndombele and Giovanni Lo Celso to work with. I mean, those were, and I think we've kind of forgotten that a little bit because the season's gone so horribly, but I mean, we've got two of the best young midfielders in Europe on our team, and if Ndombele can recover any level of fitness, you know, that's a good base to start next season with.
Yeah, and, you know, it's frustrating because obviously that was the base we were talking about starting this season with, and, you know, obviously it's taken until now to even starting to get a semblance of that. But speaking of Ndombele's fitness, Jose this week made some real snarky comments about his health that have me pretty concerned.
But you have to pair those with, he's also talked about Ndombele like he's a, he's also been fairly effusive in his praise of Ndombele's skill, but you're right. It is, I think as Spurs fans, we've hated Mourinho for so long, we tend to assume the worst when he talks a little bit of shit in the press.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, he has said in the past, his feeling of Ndombele was that, you know, he's a bit of a bitch. He was suggesting that he called him out earlier in the season for declaring himself unfit for a match. And then he called him out, and then he played, and then, lo and behold, he got hurt and has been out ever since. And recently, Jose made a comment about how the issue with his fitness isn't that, I think it was that he's the key part of that. It's not the physios, it's not him, it's not the doctors, it's Ndombele. Like, it, in a way that made it sound like, well, medically, everything's fine, but mentally, like, he is somehow holding himself back physically.
That's not how I took it. I don't think we're terribly far apart. I got the impression of his fitness isn't where it needs to be because he does not take his fitness seriously enough. And that's certainly, if Brian were here, I think he would tell us that that is certainly of a piece with some criticisms that we heard about Ndombele from while he was in France. I don't know about you, when I read these criticisms before, I assume there was at least a hint of racism involved there, or at least lazy punditry. I don't want to say Mourinho's not capable of that, because God knows I think he's capable of lazy and probably slightly racist punditry, but I don't know. This is one of those things where it's, unless you're there, it's hard to judge. I gotta say, it's not great to have Mourinho criticizing one of our best players in the press. Maybe he's just trying to sort of put a fire under his ass. I hope that's what it is. He was in the squad today. It wasn't used.
But notably, he didn't come on. And we brought on Eric Dier. We brought on Eriksen, who's, you know, had one foot out the door all season and is inching closer to a move to Inter every day. You know, to not bring him on. We brought on Jedson, who literally, you know, we just signed like a week ago, and he's already,
credit to Jedson,
two cameos.
Unlike Eriksen and Dier, who have both looked respectively checked out and dead, I mean, Jedson, at least, like, you can make the argument to me that he should have been on over maybe Ndombele if Ndombele is not 100% fit right now. Now, why Ndombele is in the squad if he's not 100% fit is another question, but yeah.
I mean, you know, you can say that, like, maybe if we were, like, coasting 3-0, like, it'd be good to get him 20 minutes to just build up his fitness or whatever.
Yes.
Because the game was tight, he wasn't ready for that. But you know, I'm going to leave Jensen aside for a minute, but his quote on Ndombele was, he's the most important part of the plan. Not me or the sports science or the medical or the nutrition. It's him, the crucial part of the plan. And I think it was Allie Gold or somebody else who said that it was meant as a dig, that it was a criticism of him as he is the part that's holding up the process.
Yes, he's clearly sending him a message. And my guess would be, like I said, you are not taking your fitness seriously enough, which, whether or not that's true, you don't love to be reading about it in the press.
Yeah, and so, and just to further, you know, imagine negative things about Jose is, you know, we've had a lot of people defending his decisions around Lo Celso and Ndombele, saying, you know, they hadn't adapted to the Premier League, and he's just been easing them in. But to see him, again, like, take Jensen, who literally just signed a week ago, and already play him twice without, you know, any opportunity.
Admittedly, as a sub, which is how he was using Lo Celso pretty much from when he got here.
I mean, Lo Celso disappeared for the month of December. Like, if you look at his minutes, he played 90 minutes against Sheffield United, I think, in Pochettino's last game or second to last game. And then Jose played him as a sub a couple of times, and then did not start him or play him at all for like a month until he finally brought him back into the team. So it's just surprising to see him take such a different...
Maybe Giovanni should learn some fucking Portuguese. How about that?
I mean, you joke, but maybe.
I'm not actually joking. Like, I think that probably plays a big role in it.
And if he's not going to learn Portuguese, at least, you know, get a Portuguese agent.
Yeah. Maybe.
But, yeah, I don't want to get too negative too fast, because I think this has been a positive week, you know, despite the fact that we dropped points at Watford.
Well, there's a little frustration in that we looked so good against Borough last week, and I think we talked about this on the podcast. You don't want to get too carried away. It's an FA Cup game. It's the second time we've seen them. It's a fucking championship-level squad. You don't want to get too carried away, but I don't know. Like, I guess we looked really good in the first half today against Norwich, but I don't know. I just want to see us play well in the league, and it's just,
it would be nice.
I know there are, like, you know, you look at our injury crisis. I think the striker is a big fucking problem in a way that maybe I was a little too dismissive of beforehand. There are mitigating factors that I think we should consider. At the same time, I feel like, I don't know, I feel like we ought to be better than this. Is that unreasonable? I mean, am I just being a spoiled fan?
No, I mean, there's been mitigating factors all season, right? And, you know, Jose's had to cope with injuries, Pochettino had to cope with injuries all season long. And, you know, the reality is we have a better squad than Norwich, than Watford. Even our backup players, even our backup's backup players are largely better than these guys. And I don't think it's unreasonable to expect a manager of Jose's experience and prestige, et cetera, to be able to cobble together a functional unit out of these guys that is capable of beating these teams. You know, I mean, Watford have been very good recently under Nigel Pearson after looking like shit under their previous two managers this season. And they're in a good patch of form. But, you know, it's like you can't look at that team and use some sort of argument about their cohesion or anything, because obviously that's nonsense. Their manager got there less than a month ago. You know, they have had way less time than we have to build some kind of cohesive unit. And, you know, they managed to put together a bunch of results and then draw us pretty comfortably. I mean,
on the one hand, they got a penalty saved. On the other hand, we were less than an inch away from winning that game. 10 years ago, we probably do win that game.
But on balance, you know.
You're right. On balance, a draw was probably a deserved result. Like, yeah.
And so, you know, you look at, you know, what Jose Mourinho's had in his, like, 3 months here, and you kind of think, like, as good a form as Watford has been in, like, lads, it's Watford. You know, you would expect us to be doing more.
Well, we just vomit all over ourselves when we play Norwich. I mean, we'll get into the penalty discussion in a minute, but we didn't. I mean, actually, that's a little unfair today. We ought to give credit where credit's due. We were the better. We looked really, I don't know about really good. We looked pretty good for the first half of that match. We were comfortably on top. probably should have scored another goal if we're all being honest with ourselves. But, you know, we looked good for a half. And then, I don't know if it's because Winks had to come off or what. We just looked like we took our foot off the gas in the second half, and it was the same old, same old. And credit to them, they dug it out today in a way they haven't done all year. But
yeah, and I mean, again, you know, and you look at Watford, and they are in a situation where their best center back is out for the season. Their second best center back was suspended. They started two brand new signings today. You know, they're a bad team in general. Like, they should not have looked as comfortable against us yes. as they did. You know, we outshot them 14-12, which obviously that doesn't tell the whole story, but I don't have Michael's expected goals numbers in front of me, nor do I have the inclination to look them up. But, you know, they had chances in that game, and we did not create a ton of really clear opportunities. And for a Spurs side, you know, aiming for the top four against the worst team in the league, you just expect better.
Yeah, these are games where you almost don't need the XG for these games, because, like, these are not games where we're a little hard done by. Like, you could go look at that first Norwich game this year and be like, yeah, we did some dumb shit. We still probably should have won that game. Like, these are games we should have played better.
We also got saved by VAR, you know, ruling off.
We did. We did in the first game. We absolutely did. But also, like, these aren't games, like, you don't leave that game being like, boy, like, you know, Norwich and Watford were real lucky we didn't, like, beat the living shit out of them. This isn't like that Middlesbrough game where they were pretty lucky that we didn't, like, put five on them in the first half. I mean, these are games where, like, maybe we're a little unlucky, but at the same time, like, we didn't play that much better than they did.
Right. You know, but it's like, I will say, you know, again, to take the positives away from this, we are looking better, you know, I think, not necessarily week to week, but I think by and large, Spurs look a little more cohesive than we did a few months ago. And, you know, it doesn't help when we give away penalties or, you know, stupid back passes that give up free goals. You know, I mean, the penalty that I was fairly soft, I think, from Sessegnon, but...
Who had been, I thought, played really well for Spurs until this match. This was, I think, by far his worst showing in a Spurs shirt.
Yeah. It was not a strong day out for Sessegnon. Part of Jose's system seems to be one marauding fullback and one fullback who stays at home. And given Sessegnon's pedigree as, you know, an attacking wide forward who scored a bunch of goals in the championship, obviously his ideal role in that lopsided fullback situation is being the attacker. But, you know, with Serge Aurier on the other side, you know, you obviously aren't going to trust him to be the guy who sits at home and plays defense all day. And he has been very good in attack and had an assist today. So, you know, I think we're not asking Sessegnon to play to his strengths. So, you know, you still have some optimism that, like, he can get better and contribute more, but yeah, today was not a good day for him.
But I thought he's done well, given, not today, but generally, I think he's done well with what we've asked him to do. I thought, until today, I would have said, I'm shocked at what a sure pair of hands he's been in defense. Like, I mean, he has not been that kind of, you know, I was expecting something like, you know, just kind of a flaky defender who was really good going forward. And I think he's been much more assured in defense, at least until today, than I was certainly expecting.
I agree. He definitely looks more composed defensively. Certainly more composed than Tanganga did against Watford on the weekend. But yeah, so, you know, we're now in a situation where Lo Celso's come into midfield, and the midfield looks better. Harry Winks, I think, had a very good game today and has looked
better. We're very harsh on Harry Winks on this podcast, and this is probably the second or third game in a row where, you tell me if I'm wrong, it feels like Mourinho's got him playing a little bit differently. Like, he is looking for forward passes in a way that he certainly wasn't looking earlier this year, and it feels like he hasn't looked for in a very long time. Now, that might be my memory distorting things, but it feels like Mourinho's got him being a little more progressive than we're used to seeing out of him.
Yeah, the ITK is, you know, and again, grain of salt, but I think it does bear out in what we've seen on the pitch. But the ITK is that Jose Mourinho had a word with Winks and said, you know, all this tidy sideways passing is nice, but it's not enough. You need to show me you can do more on the ball to warrant a place in this team. And, you know, I don't know how true those rumors are, but, you know, the fact is today in particular, and I think in his recent appearances, he has shown a lot more willingness to drive forward in possession and look for that forward pass and not just, you know, be a safe pair of hands with the ball. And, you know, I think we were noticeably worse when he came off injured today.
Now, some of that has to do with we put Eric Dyer's shambling corpse on the pitch. But, yes, I think... Yeah. It's crazy. I mean, Mourinho, I wasn't expecting Mourinho to improve young players when he got here, but he's starting He started him. He started Winks. I mean, he's improving Winks. It's just not what I was expecting.
No, not at all. And you know, I'm still not sure what I was expecting. So everything, you know, remains a bit of a surprising blur.
But so I guess. I mean, go ahead, Ben. I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead, Greg.
Thanks, Ben. I guess my thing is, I agree with you in that you're seeing certain elements of this team start to click. You're seeing Lo Celso in midfield. Winks is improving. I think the defense has been dramatically better, at least in terms of center backs. You know, Vertonghen is worrying, but that seems to have much more to do with individual play than anything the coaching staff has to do. You know, Sanchez is much better. I think Sessegnon's been fine. There's a lot that I think Mourinho has actually done a halfway decent job with. But
before we get to the negatives, though, I do think we need to take a second to talk about Serge Aurier, who, you know, is a guy we've kind of all wanted out of the club for a while now. He's been a
liability. He didn't throw any points away against Norwich, which is an improvement over what he's done earlier this year.
I mean, he really hasn't thrown points away in a while now.
Month. You know, let's like the 28th of December, he threw away 2 points against the worst team in the league.
All this is on a very truncated timeline, so, you know, a month in Jose years is...
You don't think, but I know we're in, like, I know this is, like, the soccer equivalent of Trump, where, like, every day is, you know, time has just lost all meaning, but I don't know. Don't you feel like we've had these periods with Aurier before? Like, he goes, like, a month or two without a major fuck-up, and you start to be like, oh, yeah, he's not so bad, and then he, like... You know, literally picks up the ball and throws it in his own net. Like, don't you feel like we've had this before? I'm not trying to be overly negative, but I feel I've seen this movie before.
I think yes, to a degree. I'm just not sure to the level of consistency. I don't know if we've had as sustained a period of good Serge Aurier.
It's been a month. It hasn't even been a month, Ben.
It's a busy month. It's, you know, it's the Christmas fixtures. There's a lot of games in that month. You know, to quote Ted Lasso, how many months are in this month?
You still want him gone, right? You still want to replace him in the summer.
I think honestly, given the number of issues we have elsewhere in the squad, right back is, especially if Tanganga, like he played against Middlesbrough, can actually perform there, you know, I'm not necessarily sure a right back is first on my shopping list. You know, I think a left back, a defensive midfielder, a striker.
I'm not even sure left back is. It's like defensive midfielder, backup striker, maybe some sort of attacking midfielder if you can get Lucas Moura the fuck out of here. I mean, Sessegnon and Davies, I don't love Davies, but, you know, I'm at least curious to see what Mourinho will do with him, because I think he's the kind of guy who might actually work under Mourinho.
Nobody has enhanced their reputation through their absence more than Ben Davies this season, and I think it is just completely undeserved. You know, like, the things that Ben Davies was good at Spurs when he was good was when he would get forward, he is a very good passer in and around the box. And we're now all imagining him as, like, the conservative defensive fullback, while Aurier or whatever imaginary right back we sign, Murad's forward down the right. But, like, this is a narrative about Ben Davies that's born solely out of the fact that he is slow. And when he plays a traditional fullback role, he often is just too slow to recover. And so we say,
I guess that's my where my interest is in him. It's but so many of his problems were kind of like what Pochettino was asking him to do, and I'm just like,
they weren't. No, they weren't.
No. The fact that he was asked to get up and, I mean, he did a lot of dumb shit wrong. What I'm saying is, I'm curious to see, especially with Mourinho, if he's just holding back and has defensive support all the time, which, again, not ideal for your fullbacks, but will that eliminate some of the problems? Because he's not, you know, there's not as much going on, for lack of a better term, because there's less responsibility or things he's required to do. Will he just be like, okay, this guy's coming at me, I gotta stop him, or at least like I've gotta funnel him into this area or whatever?
No. The thing is, like, Ben Davis is a bad defender, and he's also slow. It's not he's a bad defender because he's slow and sometimes gets caught out of position like Kieran Trippier was. He's just a bad defender. That guy gets like heads up dribbled every time. Every time he is forced to defend one on one in a fullback area in our own third. He is not good defensively. Period.
We'll
see him, I'm sure, at some point, maybe this season, maybe next season, because, you know, we all are gonna have this idea of Ben Davis defensive fullback in our heads. But I'm gonna put that down now and say he will not be good at that role and we need a new left back.
Well, regardless, defensive midfielder needs to be our first, second, and third priority. I mean, it's a problem.
Well, that's the striker we signed in January. But yeah.
Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to that in a few minutes.
Just to go back to Serge Aurier, who I'm just really interested in gushing about right now. He has more assists from right back than anybody in the Premier League this season besides Trent Alexander-Arnold with 7 assists in all competitions. Like, that's a lot. That's very good.
Man, it's like bubbles on the wire. It's like, you just, man, you want to trust that guy like with the keys to your car? I don't know, man. Like, there's so much bad behavior there. I'm not sure I'm ready.
You know what? Maybe he's gonna relapse. Maybe you lock him in his sister's basement for long enough, and he'll get clean.
Maybe Serge Aurier will be the only good storyline in Spurs season next year. We hadn't thought of that, huh?
I mean, he has a real credible claim to being our player of the season this season.
Jesus Christ.
You know, so, yes, that's largely because everybody else isn't consistently
good. I mean,
it's
Lo Celso has the credible claim, but what I want to talk about is you look at this team and you look at these pieces are improving, like Serge Aurier, but it doesn't feel like they're moving towards a system. It doesn't feel like they're figuring out a style of play or a approach. It just sort of figures out, and this is maybe a product of Mourinho took them over midstream. I've said, like I keep saying, it's the new where there's smoke, there's fire. You know, it's Mourinho is stopping the bleeding and he's just trying to get certain things to work better and doesn't really have the time to do a holistic approach until the summer. It just doesn't feel like there's an overall approach. Now, I guess my question about that is how much of that is we don't have a striker anymore? I mean, it's been about a month since Kane got crocked, and I think our result had started to dip before Kane got hurt, but I know they kept dipping after Kane got hurt. So, I guess, I mean, do you think being strikerless has a lot to do with sort of formless approach we've had to our games lately?
It certainly doesn't help. We don't really have a focal point of our attack. But I think before that, you're right, we looked very disjointed. We don't seem to have a clear attacking plan when we get into the final third. It seems very Harry Redknapp, like, just get down there and express yourself sort of attacking play.
That would be better. We just sort of get down there and it's like, Lo Celso will make some
expressive.
Yeah. Lo Celso will make some great pass and then, you know, everyone will stand around picking their nose. The fact that Son, like, you know, got himself, like, banned for 3 games and then came back on a cold streak hasn't helped matters at all. The fact that Lucas Moura doesn't have 2 brain cells to bang together hasn't helped. I just can't help but thinking, even in his diminished state, like, Kane at least gave you something to work with. Now we've just got, you know, nothing. And I think that's why we're being linked with, you know, these kind of, like, rando, and I guess we could talk about them now. We've been linked with Piontek and Willian Jose out of Milan and Real Sociedad, respectively. I mean, I think our transfer strategy for the month of December very much has to do with we're looking for cheap ways that don't entangle us long term to plug certain holes in the squad. But, you know, I guess they, you know, they really think we need a striker in a way that I thought Son or even Mora might be able to fix. But you look at the last couple weeks and I don't know, I'm starting to come around to the fact that they're not a solution.
Yeah, I mean, I think Lucas Mora is just very, very obviously not a striker. I mean, I know this is a conversation we've had so many times, but like his obvious skill set is as a ball progressing wide player. He dribbles really well. He's fast with the ball. He's good in tight spaces. He's not a great shooter. He is not a guy who moves into space really well to get open for passes, to get chances. And yet we keep playing him as our number nine. Heung-min Son, I think, is a much better fit for that role. Obviously, he hasn't really helped his case for that position through his terrible run of finishing that he's been on in the last few games. But, you know, I think if somebody's going to be the striker, he's a much better fit than Lucas Mora. Honestly, Dele Alli makes more sense as a striker than Lucas Mora. He's another guy who his off-the-ball movement is very, very strong and is a guy that, you know, like you saw today, getting on the end of that Serge Aurier low cross to score the opener. You know, he is good in the penalty box. Like, that is in a season where Dele Alli looks increasingly ineffective, I think, in a lot of areas of play, the one spot that he's still really, really good is around the penalty box.
Well, it seems like we're looking for big, strong get shots in the box. I mean, kind of like Llorente, but it looks like we're looking for something a little more mobile just in terms of the targets we're going after. But it looks like we're going for a guy that just like we can pump balls into him and he can get like it looks like honestly, it looks like we're trying to get our shot numbers up.
Right. And I think part of the problem, again, is, you know, the style of our attacking play is you don't look at the way we move the ball. You know, out of possession, I think it's very clear we are trying to do a lot more counterattacking than we did under Pochettino. We're trying to move the ball quickly and break quickly with Lucas and Son being very, very fast and direct players. You know, we had a counter today where it fell apart because Lucas, while being fast and direct, just cannot pass the ball very well and played the initial out ball to Heung-min Son behind him, and then Son had to do like a little 1-2, and then Lucas played it behind him a second time, and it just killed the chance. And so, you know, I think our personnel is not as suited to counterattacking as we'd like it to be, just by virtue of the fact that Lucas isn't that good. But in possession is where we really don't look like we have any kind of like systemic approach for how we want to break teams down. You know, our go-to move seems to be get Aurier free on the overlap and let him put in a cross or a cutback, and then hope we can kind of let something shake out from that. You know, it's not a super deliberate lock-picking kind of creative move defenders around, open up space, play a lot of through balls. Like, we're not really doing that. And I think part of that problem is because, like I said before, we seem to be operating on a express yourself sort of game plan where when we had Kane in the side, it was very obvious and easy for players to express themselves in the direction of ending up with a ball at Kane's feet in the box. And even though Kane is worse than he used to be and is looking limited, you know, I think everybody on the team knows if you find him in the box, he'll put a shot on goal and score often enough that you'll get goals. And I think without him, there's no real obvious focal point for this attack. And because there doesn't seem to be a real game plan for how we're going to move towards goal, players are kind of floundering a little bit, and just doing what feels right in the moment without a sense that, okay, we want to get, you know, Sun free at the back post doing X, Y, and Z to get him there, or we're going to find Dele Alli crashing late from the top of the box. Like, we don't seem to have a game plan. There's nobody who in Kane's absence has absorbed the majority of those shots and become, you know, the guy. And so it's just a bunch of people doing a bunch of different things. And sometimes it works because our players are better than players on most other teams. And so I think signing this big, targety, get in the box, take some shots striker, even if they're not very good, like, I don't think either of our two targets are particularly exceptional. They're not the kinds of guys that, you know, Liverpool's incredible transfer program would have identified and said, oh, this is somebody we need to sign. They're just two guys who can do a job who are available. But I think either one of them, by virtue of being just a focus for the attack to build around and play towards, will make us better, because Jose has not instilled attacking philosophy into this team. And so on the one hand, I'm happy that we're like targeting guys like that to fix this problem. But on the other hand, I'm very, very dismayed that Jose seems to have very few ideas about what a Premier League attack for a top level club should look like in the year of our Lord 2020.
I mean, I respect the fact that Mourinho got hit by two pretty ugly injuries that might have fucked up any plans he had when he came in. I mean, losing Kane, like I said, even in his diminished state, as you were saying, Ben, he gave us something, even if it was just conceptually. Putting aside, like, I think even, you know, you shouldn't dismiss him as a finisher at this point. Losing Kane sucks. Losing Sissoko hurts, too. And, like, as much as we think we could probably do better and probably should do better, I mean, he still gives you something in the structure of this midfield, which has been a huge problem. And losing both of those guys really hurts. And I understand why maybe that threw a wrench into his works. I think, interestingly, which I don't think we've talked about a lot, is Jedson has looked surprisingly interesting in his brief cameos. It hasn't been a lot, so I don't want to get carried away. But, I mean, you can... I don't know about you. It looks like our transfers right now, we are trying to plug holes in the ship in a way that just doesn't cost us a ton of money. Let's get through this season, and we'll, like, really figure stuff out in the summer. But right now, we're trying to, like, just plug these holes and not get ourselves on the hook for big deals. Now, it looks like Jedson, we can fuck him off at any moment in time for about 4 million euros. That said, he looks like an interesting player. I don't know if he's whatever the hell the transfer clause is. I think it's like 30 million or 40 million, or is it 50 million? I can't remember.
It's Jedson, not Jedson. I don't know why I keep saying Jedson.
Because I haven't heard his name pronounced enough in matches. That's why.
Yeah, so I'm not really entirely clear what he is. You know, I think someone described him as sort of better Sissoko, and somebody refined that as Ramirez from Chelsea is probably a better comparison. But, you know, only seeing him in cameos and in games like we did today and against Watford, where, you know, he hasn't, like, taken up a sort of real positional role so much as just get out there and fuck shit up and try to make something happen.
We looked actually dangerous against Watford. We looked actually dangerous against Watford when he came on. I mean, which it shouldn't take that, but compared to what we were watching before that.
Yeah, I mean, he brought a lot of energy, some defensive work, you know, cutting out attacks and building well. He looked involved in the final third. You know, he certainly seemed to have a lot of energy. I don't understand exactly what the game plan is with him, but with Harry Winks out and Ndombele maybe still not back, I wouldn't be shocked if we saw a midfield of him and Lo Celso against Southampton in the FA Cup this weekend.
I mean, the transfer's still super weird, and it's clearly related to Mendes in some way, but I mean, it looks promising enough. It doesn't seem like it was a totally bad idea. I mean, we're two games in. Who the fuck knows? But, you know, I'm interested to see how it goes, and it looks like it might have some dividends. I mean, you can see something there. Now, I mean, the question I would have is, if I'm seeing something out of him in England, like, they gave up on him in Portugal? Like, that's where I start to, you know, and who the fuck knows? I'm not watching Benfica games, like, on any sort of basis, so I don't know what happened, but it's confounding a little bit.
I think we talked about this last week, but it sounds like, you know, he faded a little bit from being the hot prospect that he started as, and, you know, he got a new manager who maybe didn't value him as much as the old manager. Who knows? He's still very young and, you know, was obviously talented enough to warrant the acclaim he got when he first broke through. So,
hey, it'd be nice if we found a little diamond in the rough. Like, it'd be like, frankly, we could use some fucking luck like that this year.
Yeah. So, you know, the other guy we're looking at is it William Jose or Jose? Where is he from?
You're asking me to pronounce it? He's from Brazil, but he plays for Sociedad in Spain. He's had decent numbers this year. He's sort of like a middling striker. He's also 28. His release clause is like 70 million euros or something, but that's just like a Spanish like thing. I mean, he's not going to cost 70 million euros. I think if Spurs can get him for 15 million, 20 million or less, we might actually take him. But I mean, I think if we can get him, Piontek is the, like, it's, if there's either of these guys has any sort of promise for us in the future, I think it's him. I mean, I think Willian is just a, like, if he just plugs a hole for a year, maybe he's like Llorente next year, which honestly we could do a lot worse if we could just get a guy who is happy to come on and can give us some goals when Kane's out. That's not the worst thing in the world, but Piontek seems like he has at least some upside. Certainly I'm not alarmed at AC Milan giving up on a player, because God knows they do that at the drop of a hat.
Yeah. So, William Jose is having his best year at Sociedad. His last 3 years, he's never cleared 0.3 XG per 90. And this year he's at 0.6, which is quite an improvement. I don't know how much of that is due to him being more of a substitute than a starter this year. I don't really know what his role is.
Maybe he likes Odegaard. I don't know.
Effective research. But yeah, so he scored 8 goals in about 1,200 minutes, which is respectable. You know, again, if he could give us 8 goals over the rest of the season, that would be great.
That's worth 15 million pounds, I would say. Like,
yeah, my concern with him is, what are the actual numbers we're talking about? Because I've seen as high as 50 million euros and I've seen as low as 15 million euros. And, you know, buying a guy at his age, he's 28, you know, this is as good as we're going to get out of him, probably.
Every rumor we've been linked with this January has been either cheap or easily disentangled. Like, we can either get rid of the guy very easily for not a lot of money, or we get them cheap, period. It seems like we're willing to pay a little bit more for Piontek, but even him, it sounds like anytime they want to like really up the price, it seems like we get cold feet. Now, this might just be...
I mean, the thing about Piontek is, you know, he is 24. He is coming off of a very good season at Genoa, before he moved to Milan. And
Milan are partly getting rid of him because they got Zlatan, which is like... Again, we're dealing with, like, Milan logic here.
Right, they're happy to mortgage their future. They are just desperate for results in the short term. They are a sad shell of themselves, and it's a tragedy to look at. But, I mean, Piontek's expected goals have been good. You know, last year, between Genoa and Milan, were... You know, he scored 20 goals last year. You know, that is the kind of guy at 23 that, yeah, it makes sense for a big move. And then this season at Milan, he scored one goal. And his underlying numbers look about the same. So you have to wonder, is he just in bad form? Is Milan, you know, creating worse chances for him and he's just having to do the best he can? Or has he gone full Christian Benteke, who year after year puts up respectable striker underlying numbers, taking really good shots from really good locations, and just forgot where the goal is? You know, at 24, it seems unlikely that that's the case. So, you know, if we're going to buy him, I'm much more excited about that because he clearly seems to have room to grow and some pedigree to fall back on, whereas William Jose seems to just kind of be what he is, which is, you know, a respectable Chris Wood mid-table-y kind of guy who gets in the box and scores some goals, which, you know, we could use, but I hope we are thinking a little more long-term than just getting through this season. Do you think that's worth thinking about, or are you just like, you know what, I see top four in our sights. Just give me the best guy who can get us there, and we'll worry about next season when it comes. And Harry Kane will be fit, so it doesn't matter.
If you think you can get a guy who will get you in top four, it's worth a little bit of money. Piontek seems to be the guy who makes sense for us as a backup striker a little bit long term. It seems to be the same type of thinking that got us Janssen, which I know that didn't work out, but like, the thought process behind Janssen and the work, that made a lot of sense. Like, and it's the kind of thing we ought to be doing. Whereas Jose is just, I mean, if he gets us in the Champions League, that's great. And it's worth the money. And if he can get us 8 goals over the rest of the year, you know, I don't mind paying a little bit and then, you know, seeing how it works out next year. It's just, like you said, I'm much more skeptical about his record. I mean, maybe this is just me thinking Milan's a fucking train wreck and, you know, I'm willing to write something off. You know, a guy had a great year before he got there. As soon as he gets to Milan, it kind of gets fucked up. I'm willing to write that off. I haven't watched enough of either of these guys to have a truly intelligent opinion, but from what I've read, from what I've seen, I mean, I'm not sure how high I'd go, but Piontek seems to be the one that actually makes sense from a longer-term perspective. And, you know, the thing about Jose is it's just like, I don't know, like I'm, like you said, his career up, he's having a career year in Europe at least right now, and he's 28, and can he duplicate that at Spurs? I don't know, it makes me nervous. I mean, not that Piontek's a lock, but it makes a lot more sense.
Right, it's like, it's almost like the difference between buying Vincent Janssen and Fernando Llorente, and I think the process and thought behind Janssen made a lot more sense, but it's undeniable that Llorente had a much more successful tenure at Spurs, and his contributions made us a lot happier.
But the difference is, Llorente had a real pedigree. Like, I mean, that guy had been a top striker in Europe for years. He'd been successful in England at Swansea. He'd been successful in England immediately before we bought him. I mean, it made a lot more sense. There was a lot more of a track record there to, like, trust.
Yeah, but he was like 40, so
yeah. But you know, my point is not that far removed from some success in England. Like, he'd scored enough goals at Swansea where you think, okay, this guy's not entirely past it. And there's just, you know, and I think we saw it, like, the guy had enough experience and sort of, you know, inherent quality that he was able to turn up in some big moments for us, even though he clearly didn't have it anymore. I mean, there was something valuable about having him on the squad, and there was even, like, you know, he can't do it anymore, you know, he's old and busted, but at least, like, that same guy is still in there, and he can do something for you. Whereas, you know, this guy at Sociedad, it's like, yeah, this is the best he's ever played, he's 28, I mean, you know, that feels like a lot more of a risk than just getting plugging Fernando Llorente, and especially if what we're talking about here, which is, I think, what we are talking about, is a short-term solution. I'm much more nervous about this signing. Now, if he costs us, like, 10 million, 15 million euros, like, fuck it, alright, whatever. That's, like, not all that. I mean, Christian Eriksen's gonna pay for that, probably. It's just,
yeah.
I would rather go with someone with a little bit of pedigree and a little bit of potential, which I think is what Piontek gives us, but I don't know. That might end up costing more than we're ready to pay, because I think we don't want to entangle ourselves too much during this window. I think they're going to really take a hard look at things this summer, and I don't think they want to, like, blow their load, for lack of a better term, right now.
So I think what colors my thinking on this a little bit is the question of, is just how short-term does this signing really need to be? You know, I think we look at it as getting through the season until Harry Kane comes back, but as we've talked about, Harry Kane, even when he comes back, may not be the Harry Kane we all know and love. And
even if he is, he gets hurt all the time, so you probably want someone who can fill in.
Right, and you know, and the other reality is if he isn't, if he is just now just further debilitated by injuries and runs even less and is just more limited than he ever was before, I am much more excited about having the guy with some longer-term upside like Piontek, because I think even though we're going to look at our squad and make some signings this summer, I don't think a long-term striker is somebody who's on the cards. You know, I don't think anybody running Spurs is counting Harry Kane out, which is reasonable. You know, he's a star player who's been phenomenal for years, but I think if we have to buy a striker right now, getting the guy who, in the worst case scenario, Harry Kane is a shell of himself, and now we find that out, you know, a month or two into next season, I would sure like to have the guy who might be a 20-goal season young striker entering his prime rather than the 28-year-old, 29-year-old now, you know, coming off a career year.
Yep, I agree.
Maybe isn't actually that good.
Now, but, you know, I think cost is the issue here, and I think if they can get, you know, I mean, think about it. Like, if we sell Eriksen, there's a rumor tonight that we might get, I mean, we're recording this Wednesday night after the Norwich game, we might get £20 million for Eriksen. It seems like they might be willing to do that, which is fucking crazy. That's still, like, negligent that we left it this late, but all things considered, it's insane we might get that. If Milan wants £30 million for Piontek, then fuck it, that costs you £10 million. Like, just do it. Get it over with. Like, I mean, if you believe in him, if you think he's your guy, then just fucking do it. I say as if Daniel Levy is listening to this podcast. It's infuriating, and it sucks. It's honestly, the fact that we were in a bad situation and it just got made so much worse by all these injuries, it sucks. And I think these are short-term moves, and hopefully they work out for us, because, you know, hopefully we bring in a striker and all of a sudden that attacking identity at least starts to congeal, because we're not far off a top four. The way we in our next couple fixtures, we play Man City, Villa, and then Chelsea, at least in the league. If we win against Villa and Chelsea, we're going to overtake Chelsea in the table. If Chelsea loses all their matches until then. And I believe that's reasonable, Ben, because what's their fixture list again?
Yeah, so Chelsea play Leicester, then Manchester United, and then they play us, while we play Man City, Aston Villa, and then Chelsea. So we're 6 points back. It's entirely reasonable to think that Chelsea lose to Leicester and Man U, and then we lose to Man City but beat Villa, and then we're 3 points back, and then we play Chelsea. And if we win that game, we're now level on points, and suddenly top four looks a whole lot different.
Here's the thing, and Michael said this today when we were talking to him about it. You know, our schedule for the rest of the season is pretty generous. We've gotten a lot of ugly games out of the way, and especially after the next few weeks, we're going to get even more ugly games out of the way. And we've got a nice run in, and if we were as good as we've been in previous years, you'd feel pretty good about our chances to sort of at least make a run at top four. The problem is we keep doing things like dropping points to Watford and dropping points to Norwich, at least if not today, earlier in the season. Our level of play needs to pick up if we're going to make top four, but there is a not crazy runway to top four right in front of us. But we're going to have to start playing a lot better.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is nobody in the Premier League has been good. I mean, Chelsea is on pace to finish with 63 points in fourth place, which is frankly terrible. And fifth place is set to finish with 56 points. Like, these are not impressive points totals. You know, we had, we finished fourth with like 70 points, 72 points before.
Jesus Christ.
And just, you know, we finished fifth with points in the 70s. You know, like,
if we didn't have luck, if we didn't have bad luck, we wouldn't have any luck at all.
So, yeah, the lucky thing is like, we're kind of, everyone sort of seems to be playing to the level of the league as a whole right now. You know, Chelsea's on 40 points. United, Spurs, and Wolves are on 34. Sheffield United's on 33. Like, that is the chasing pack right now in top four, and it is just bleak all around. You know, nobody looks like they deserve it. You know, Southampton was in the relegation spots a month ago, and they're now in ninth ahead of Arsenal. You know, it's all very, very tight. So the first team that kind of figures shit out and goes on a little bit of a run can really make something happen. And, you know,
why not us?
It's us. But, you know, I think that's the thing that's been so hard to take this season is we keep getting these little glimmers of hope that, like, oh, maybe if we just beat Chelsea, we're going to be, you know, in top four. And then we slide back 9 points and they're like, ah, fuck, everything's terrible.
Lo Celso is running our midfield. Maybe that'll be a springboard for better performances. And
yeah, part of me just wants the season to be dead and buried so I can stop like feeling anything about it and then just sort of check out until the summer. But like we keep just doing enough to drag us back into contention, and it's horrible. It's just horrible to watch.
This is such a bad year. I don't remember. I guess because it was dead and buried. I just don't remember the Sherwood year being this miserable. Like, I'm sure it was. I remember the AVB part of that year being miserable. I don't remember the Sherwood part. Maybe because I just had no expectations because Sherwood was dumb as a bag of hammers, but...
Yeah, I mean, the Sherwood year, like, we finished sixth and we were like, that's about right. You know, I don't remember ever feeling like, oh, maybe Tim Sherwood could get us to top four. It was always just sort of like, what's the best we're going to do to salvage this terrible season?
Oh, Europa League place. I can't believe it.
Like, yeah. That's respectable. That's not utterly humiliating. Whereas, you know, that's where we are right now, sitting in sixth, but it keeps feeling like we're so close. And also feeling like if we lose a few, we're going to be in relegation form. And
I mean, part of it's because we were in the Champions League final last year, but it feels like there's just enough good shit on this team. Like, they should be able to put it together. But they haven't played well against a good team all fucking season. So it's like, until we do that, that's my sort of litmus test for Spurs. Like, until we go play well against Chelsea and get a result, then, like, you know, who fucking cares? Right. I mean,
exactly. I mean, like, you know, as tight as things are, we're further away from third place than we are from 19th place. You know? Like, it's tight in the very wrong direction for us. So every week is such a roller coaster of emotions where, you know, you lose two in a row and suddenly you're like, fuck, are we going to finish bottom half of the table?
I mean, I don't know. I'm like, halfway convinced we're definitely going to win the FA Cup this year just because Mourinho coming in and winning the FA Cup would be such, like, a weird coda to, like, the Pochettino era that it, you know, it just feels like the kind of strange thing that's at, like, the end of a documentary talking about how weird it was. Like, you know, when they make the documentary about Pochettino Spurs in, like, 10 years, which they will make documentaries about that those teams, it's good. Like, that just feels like the appropriate strange coda to end that story on. You know, Mourinho, of all people, comes in here and somehow takes a garbage team and wins the FA Cup with it. That said, I don't fucking see this team winning jack shit this year with the way we're playing, because even the most generous FA Cup draw that you can imagine, we're going to have to play someone good sooner or later. In fact, we might be playing that team this weekend, because, like, as you said earlier, Ben, Southampton's been playing a lot better. Do you rate our chances against the Saints?
No, they have Danny Ings, who is the superior Harry Kane. You know, what are we going to do with that? But yeah, I mean, like, it goes not without saying that the last time we won a trophy was in Wander Ramos' first season when he took over from a poor start from Martignol and won us the League Cup. You know, we finished 11th that season. You know, so...
Would you be fine falling out of Champions League qualification to get the FA Cup?
I would say I wouldn't ordinarily, but in this season I'm so resigned to the fact that probably not finishing in the Champions League positions that, Yeah, absolutely. You can guarantee me a trophy after this shit show of a season, I'm absolutely taking it.
It would be very, I'm not mad, this is actually funny to me, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and it's like, you know, late enough in the season that, you know, Harry Kane could make his glorious return rushed back from injury to score the game-winning penalty before hobbling off and being injured for the remainder of his career.
No, misses the Euros, but that means he's healthy for next season, and he's back to the form that we all expect out of him.
Yeah. No, I would absolutely take an FA Cup win over anything this season. I'm just, you know, we talked about wanting this group of guys to win a trophy, and like, yeah, we wanted it to happen under Pochettino because that was the team, but, you know, even if like the remnants of that Pochettino side lift a trophy, you know, it'll still be nice to see Lamella and Toby and all these guys, you know.
Lamella's the one. Lamella's the guy that I just, more than any other player on this team, I want to see him lift a trophy on Spurs. Like, it's, that would mean a lot to me as a fan.
I mean, the thing is like, you know, we won the last trophy under Juan de Ramos, but time has kind of flattened those eras together in such a way that I'm not like, oh, yep, that was the Juan de Ramos team, even though that I know he won it. It was that era of Tottenham, you know.
It was the Yule team. It was the Yule era, yeah.
And Levy and Dawson and all those guys. You know, it wasn't a team defined by Juan de Ramos. It was just he happened to be the manager when it happened. So, you know, it's the kind of thing that even though it won't feel as good as Pochettino being there to lift that trophy with us, it's the kind of thing that a decade from now I'll still be like, oh, yeah. These guys like Dele and Lamella and, you know, whoever, like I'll still just be happy that that team that I loved got to celebrate something.
It makes me so sad. This is, I think there's like the 2012 Orioles are the only team I've enjoyed watching more than this particular group of players for Tottenham. And it's just sad to me that they're not going to win it. I feel like it's unlikely that this group of players is going to win a trophy. I mean, maybe next year a few of them will still be around and, you know, they'll win something. But I think, to your point, this is the year where
it's the last year
where, like, it would be where it would, like you said, it would just gel, it would gel together with the Pochettino era because it would feel like it's that team. And even though a lot of those guys are gone and they're not there, it would still feel like as a part of it. And I feel like next year this team's going to look a lot different and have a much different identity one way or another. And I don't know.
I would like it to be a trivia question one day that Christian Eriksen was the member of the Pochettino Tottenham side who was not there for our first trophy win.
Oh, man, we need to do a whole podcast about my very complicated feelings on Christian Eriksen. I'm all for labor solidarity until it comes to Christian Eriksen, and then I'm just totally on management's side. So that's Tottenham. There's a lot to talk about this week. Ben, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at ComradeUSpurs.
And you can find me on Twitter at Skipjack0079. Yeah, so it was just a two-hander for us tonight on our very fancy microphones purchased for us by our very loving family members. So on behalf for them, for Ben, and of course for Brett Rainbow, I've been your host, Greg. Come on, you Spurs.